Hey friends, welcome to another episode of Voices of Hope. This week on the podcast, we have Dan and Kari. They're my good friends from a seminary. They live out in Holland, Michigan, and they join us for a conversation of what it means to be a Christian. We talk about the Good Samaritan story, as we've been talking about that for the last month in worship with our series, Won't You Be My Neighbor? And so I hope you enjoy the conversation. The audio at up until probably 6 minutes is going to be a little bit soft, but then we fix that. So just bear with it. But here are Dan and Kari. Welcome to the podcast. Dan and Kari, you're my friends from seminary, and you guys live out in Michigan, West Michigan currently. Are you guys still like Holland Township? Are you different?
We live south of Holland now, out in the countryside, in like the woods.
Okay. Great. Perfect for October, for Halloween. Spooky.
Mm-hmm. Yes. There are no street lights, so it gets super dark around here. And sometimes we hear like coyotes howling and stuff, so that's fun.
Oh. Well, we hear that here too. There's, there'll be a pack of them. You mostly hear them when they attack an animal. It's not always fun. Cal goes and sits on the porch and he listens and like tilts his head and stuff, and I try to like cover his ears and I'm like, please don't listen to it.
Oh no. Protect him from knowing what's happening.
So I wanted you guys on the podcast because we've been doing a series called Won't You Be My Neighbor, and we've been talking about the Good Samaritan story and what that means, how that's an important part of being a Christian. And so I wanted our conversation to kind of revolve around, what does it mean to be a Christian to you? And do you consider yourself a Christian? Do you not like that label? So I guess we can start with that, is do you consider yourself Christian and why?
Well, it's interesting to have that be the starting point. We actually just had a conversation about this the other night with a friend of ours who used to be Christian, was raised in a Christian family, and now considers himself agnostic. And he pushed us at times to consider dropping that label altogether because of how intense the cultural baggage is in our current society, especially politically. From his perspective, the idea of being a Christian in America, especially an evangelical Christian, especially a white Christian, is so fraught with problems, whether that's denying climate change and harming the environment, or being opposed to asylum seekers getting entry into the country as they're supposed to legally, a whole host of what I guess I would term mostly social problems, that he encouraged us strongly to consider not even associating ourselves with that label anymore. I still do consider myself a Christian. I mourn what that label has come to mean to so many, and what it represents in certain places in our country, but not willing to throw the baby out with the bathwater on that either.
Hmm.
Yeah, I definitely also feel like I will, keep taking on the label of Christian, even if it has all of this negative connotation. I kind of feel like that's the truth of it. And even if we've got some, drunk uncles embarrassing themselves at the wedding, so to speak, Christians who are doing things that maybe make me not so proud. The reality is that they're still one of us, and I still have to love them and show them grace and also try to be a better incarnation of that label.
Yeah, because even if you get rid of that label, you're still kind of the same thing as what the label represents. Because I know some people that will say, I don't want to call myself Christian, I'm Christ follower, Christ disciple of Christ, and it's kind of like, it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah, we actually had that exact part in our conversation where we talked about the different different ways people have tried to get away from this. The Christ follower, the disciple of Christ, kind of maybe back when our parents were our age, and then, you know, I think when we were in college, one of the big sort of, I guess I'd almost call it a movement, was it's a relationship, not a religion, trying to disassociate with what I guess I would call Christianity as a...
like an institution.
Yeah, as an institution, yeah, to get away from that that label, because it became so problematic. And interestingly, for people on both sides of the spectrum, I think.
Do you think... that's interesting when you bring up institution, because that's something I've been thinking about a lot lately. Working at a church in the suburbs of Denver, of Colorado, you know, we have beautiful weather 300 days of the year, and people like to go hiking and do all kinds of fun stuff. There's a lot of things to do besides church. And I'm just in this place where I start to wonder, like, how, like, I don't think the church is going to die, but I think it's possible the institution of church is going to go away somehow in 50 years or something like that. Do you guys foresee it going that way?
I think the movement that I see is that we're sort of following the European movement toward post-Christian society, although I think we are fundamentally different in that we have really only ever had Christianity as the only major religion in our country. I don't know that we'll go quite as quickly or the same way that Europe did, but I think we're moving that way. You know, for me as an ordained minister, the fascinating thing is to think, how much longer will clergy be a full-time paid position to run a church? In a lot of areas of the world, that's a bivocational position. You have a job where you make your money, and then you pastor a church and preach and do probably as many or more hours a week as our pastors do for the church on a volunteer basis. And I think that's probably, from my perspective, one of the more interesting trends that I think we'll see being played out fairly soon here.
Yeah, I wonder sometimes to what degree... I mean, church culture is changing for sure, and the importance of attending the building once a week and engaging in it as a like a community of its own has certainly declined maybe in the past 50 years or so. It's hard for me to imagine Christianity, the faith, the worldview, disappearing without many generations going by.
Right.
But I mean, I think it's valid to wonder if the church as the institution that it exists as now is going to stick around or not, because, yeah, as you said, people have other things to do, and they have other ways to get the community that they crave, you know?
And I think, you know, an important note here is, you know, we're sitting here as three probably middle class, you know, white educated people stipulating on what's going to happen here. But the reality in a global perspective is that the church is exploding in the South and in the East. So we're moving from maybe, I don't know, maybe one of the first times out of a place in history where the European Caucasian voice is kind of the dominant force of the church in the world, to a place where I think we desperately need to be, which is inviting the voices, or maybe needing the voices of the global South and the global East.
I think I'm more on the what you said, Dan, about clergy, because that's one of the things for me I'm thinking institutionally as a church is, I think there is going to be a point where congregations can no longer afford pastors or their buildings. And so then Christianity itself, or the church itself, is going to take on a different face than what maybe America has been used to in the past. And I agree with Kari too, that I don't see Christianity dying out. It's just more of the institution, that the brick and mortar stuff, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that is a place where I think sometimes I get a little stuck in my training and thinking that I'm very, very important, as an educated, ordained minister, because in so many places in the world, there are, you know, house churches or communal churches where they don't, you know, drive 20 miles to go to the church they like the most. In this more institutional setting, it's a more organic sort of operation. And that always has made me nervous, wondering, well, who's providing the direction? Who's providing the preaching and the biblical literacy training and all of that? But that'll be an interesting thing for me to wrestle with as the institution continues to fade, I think.
So going back to the story of the Good Samaritan, do you two think that's kind of a key story to understand what it means to be a Christian?
Yes. Next question. No, I'm just kidding. No, yeah, I think it's incredibly foundational. You see encapsulated in that story so many themes that are, you know, spread across the Bible. Like, even though God comes to Israel and guides the Hebrew people in a certain way, that he's truly the God of all people, and that, you know, the Samaritans and the Babylonians, you know, all these different cultures coexisting next to each other could still love each other and benefit from devotion to God and be examples of God's love to one another. Whether or not they necessarily know what the Jews know.
Do you think it's possible to misunderstand the story? Because you said a lot of key things about understanding what the story is and what it means. But I think sometimes people read it as a Christian, you're supposed to do the right thing. And they miss out on the whole cultural piece of it and how Jesus was pushing buttons. Do you think, I just think back to my own childhood, that story was mostly about you're supposed to help people, but there was never anything taught through that story that, oh, guess what? You got to help all people. That's part of what this story means. I mean, do you guys...
If I can actually share an anecdote on that, uh-huh. I remember... probably middle school, early high school youth group, we were studying this story, and in trying to impress upon us how countercultural this story was, the youth leader said this would be like welcoming an Iraqi terrorist into your house. Mm-hmm. And she immediately lost control of the youth group as students took turns sharing what exactly they would do if they ever found an Iraqi terrorist anywhere around where they lived. So
that sounds like,
yes,
a youth group
adventures
moment.
In missing the point.
Were the kids all sharing about how they would dress their wounds and nurse them back to health?
Funny, that's not what I remember about.
Oh no.
No, I mean, to a more serious point. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. We, I think as, look, I don't, maybe everyone in the world does this, but I don't know. All I can speak from is my experience at this point. And to say that I think we as Americans tend to favor a plain reading of scripture when it suits us. So don't tell me about all of those biblical studies. Don't tell me about all of this cultural baggage. Don't tell me about the original language.
You know, it says what it says. There's this myth in American Christianity that's super active that reading the Bible takes no interpretation. It's simply, you just read what it says.
Hmm.
And I think that it robs the text of so much of its richness. And sometimes I think it actually, there are times when I think it leads to really damaging interpretations, or at least not at all what the author of the passage, you know, meant to communicate through that. So I guess the most immediate example would be the Church of Laodicea in Revelation is being told to be either hot or cold, but they're lukewarm, so God will spit them out of his mouth. And I remember being taught as a youngster, either be a Christian or an atheist, but don't be a half Christian, because God will hate you more if you're a half Christian than if you're a straight up atheist. And what it's actually saying is this church is in between towns. One has a hot spring, one has a cold spring. And by the time the water gets to this town, it's not good for either bathing in the healing of warm water or for the refreshing drink of cold water. It's just lukewarm. It's not useful. So if you're meant to be hot water to be soothing and healing, be that. And if you're meant to be cold and refreshing, be that. But don't be lukewarm good for nothing, because that is what gets you spit out of the mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. You went to Revelation. I'm impressed.
Oops.
Or Revelations.
Barnes and Nobles?
What?
You're going to have to do some serious editing on this. I'm doing like 6-minute answers to every question.
No, it's good. No, that's good stuff, because people don't listen in to hear me every week. That would be awful. There was a movie or a TV show that I watched the other day, and they said Revelations when they're referring to the book of the Bible, and I almost flipped the coffee table over.
That's amazing.
But I'm also guilty of saying 1 Corinthian or 2 Corinthians.
Oh, really?
Instead of 1st and 2nd.
Unforgivable.
Yeah.
Do you think, as we're talking about what does it mean to be a Christian or what does a Christian look like, do you think the perception of who a Christian is has changed over the last 10, 15 years?
That's a fascinating question. I know my perception has changed over the last 10 or 15 years.
Because I think...
I definitely have grown an awareness of people thinking that Christians are, you know, hypocrites and holier-than-thou attitude and, you know, all these negative things.
I think I would submit that with the widening political divide... there's been and now this is sort of a guess. I don't have anything to back this up, but I think maybe there's been a larger shift of young people who want to still be Christians, but want to connect that with a, social justice, sort of passion. I wonder if the Christian left was quite as, big 20, 25 years ago as it is now. I would think maybe not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think we certainly see, you know, I think most of the time they proclaim themselves as progressive Christians. And in some ways I think that, you know, how the pendulum always swings, like when we want to react to something, sometimes we go far off to the side or to the left or to the right. And I think for so many years, Christians were put into this bubble of you are conservative or Republican and you vote a certain way if you are a Christian. And I think that has changed, that cultural perception of that.
Yeah.
I mean, depending on where you live, I think. Like, if you think about where we're from back, you know, in the rural Midwest, I think that that's still a pretty prominent sure. attitude. And even where we're settling or trying to settle down in a church out here kind of in rural West Michigan, you know, outside of the sort of the populated four county area they referred to with the kind of the cities in it, I think that's very much still alive here. But I think as a national narrative that may be breaking down as you're starting to see, you know, through the 2000s, these huge leaders of, you know, the evangelical movement or the moral majority starting to kind of falter and stumble in their leadership or in their life choices, morality, whatever it may be.
Speaking of that, what kind of role do you think power and control plays within Christianity?
What do you mean by that?
Because I think some people would say that as Christians, I think there's oftentimes two different thoughts of how we should influence others or show the love of Christ. Mm-hmm. And some people think that's through gaining power and control and through legislative ways of making laws that people follow, while others believe that it's more of affecting the heart in some ways of showing radical love to people that others don't show love to. And that's how you change the hearts and minds of people. Do you kind of get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think I get what you're saying. I mean, I see exactly the movement that you're talking about where people hope that if they impose this external structure of morality, mm-hmm. that it will make God happy that these people are towing the line in a very legalistic way. But the pattern that I see in scripture doesn't seem to support that at all. And in my view, I mean, you know, in the Old Testament, you have the Jews expected to have, you know, certain things they eat and don't eat. And that was like to set them apart and, you know, make them a nation close to God. And they didn't like expect other people to do that. It was just, you know, something that they did because of their faith and commitment to God. And then, you know, in the New Testament, you have like, we have communion that sets us apart or brings us together. And I wouldn't see that as something that's like, you know, the act itself, imposing it on someone is going to change their mind, but rather it's a manifestation of an inward reality. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that came out clear at all, but
I think what comes to my mind is again, I can't speak as to whether or not this is a historical pattern or not, but it's not just in the national political stage that this is happening. I mean, you look at small or large denominations across our country, and in their own religious governments, they're having these fights as well. It's mm-hmm. more about legislating who's right and who is wrong. They want something to turn to know in a black and white fashion, homosexual marriage is either okay or it's not. Women in leadership is either okay or it's not. We can't, as a church or as people, handle the ambiguity of saying, we don't know yet, and we're going to just kind of keep feeling it out. We want to battle. This is the hill we will die on, figuring out whether or not this thing is okay. We need rules to tell us one way or the other. And I see us kind of making an ironic turn back to the Old Testament church, to slavery of the law that we can never uphold anyway, mm-hmm. rather than dwelling in this love your neighbor, love your enemy, love yourself, love God first and foremost. This freedom from the rules and regulations that ruled the church, that ruled the community of you know, God's followers. We want those rules. We need those rules because we don't know who's right and who's wrong without them. We don't know who's in and who's out. And we, you know, now more than ever, it's a scary time, right? That's the narrative we keep hearing. Be scared of the other because they're trying to destroy you. They're trying to take away Christmas. They're trying to take away Christian music. They're trying to take away, you know, and I'm giving examples.
Prayers, schools, it's...
And we're favoring, you know, what people on the right might feel, but it's true on the left as well. They're trying to take away access to abortion. They're trying to let people, they're trying to take away the ability to force someone to make a wedding cake for a homosexual couple, mm-hmm. right? Like all of us do this. We want the rules. We want the regulations. We want to know who's right, who's wrong. We want that certainty. And that doesn't, in my mind, match up very well with where God has called us to live, which is in the messiness of relationships and love and grace. And it puts us in an awkward position that we're not used to.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think in the story of the Good Samaritan, you know, he doesn't make sure that this person agrees with him on things before just helping this guy who's suffering on the side of the road. You know, I mean, it's unattached to parsing out these issues of what's right and what's wrong and is everything as it should be. No, you just help a person.
Well, it's kind of, and that's ironic in the story itself, because it's a, you know, a teacher of the law asking Jesus this question of who is my neighbor, you know, trying to figure out the black and white, this is my neighbor, that's not. And
that's so true. And yeah. So,
you know, even as I've, even in just the few seconds since I spoke, I'm already realizing, you know, I don't think this is anything unique to now. This is, you know, some say I was baptized by Paul, others by Apollos, you know, mm-hmm. The Jerusalem Council in Acts, you know, throughout even the New Testament, we see people trying to put themselves into camps. So I guess all that to say, this is something that's maybe part of the human condition, is the desire to know who's who and where they stand and whether or not they're on my team. But I would still say that I think the calling of Christ is one that's neither that simple nor that complicated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, you know, this question, I think churches and people are going to continue to ask themselves in the coming years, if we continue to polarize as a culture, because for some reason, I think in America, we've tied our politics and our faith together so tightly that we can't really unattach them. Did you guys hear that?
Yeah.
Yeah, what was that?
As a notification that I got an email. So I'll have to cut that out.
You can start that over.
Yeah. What was I saying?
We've tied our politics and
our faith,
religion
together,
so close together.
Yeah. And so, and my hope is, you know, in the coming years, we're going to start to kind of wake up in some ways and be like, what are we doing? Like, the way we're doing things currently is not solving anything. It's just about who's going to win and who's going to lose. And it's not about how do we create a society that is helpful for all people. And I think, in my mind, the history of Christianity, or what we're supposed to be, we are supposed to be those people that are at the forefront of those talks. So I think this question of what does it mean to be a Christian is going to start to impact people a lot more on a personal level than sometimes it currently is for the future. I think people will like you too. And so thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us. We really enjoyed this.
Good to talk with you again, Jordan. Appreciate it.
You can learn more about New Hope Presbyterian Church by going to www.newhopepres.org. You can also find us at Facebook by searching New Hope Presbyterian Church and follow us on Instagram at New Hope Pres. Thank you for listening.